سورة الفاتحة. حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله. والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد
وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. أما بعد، فقد قال الله الحكيم في كتابه المتين، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، ألف لام ميم، أحسب الناس أن يتركوا ويقولوا آمنا وهم لا يفتنون. صلوات على محمد وعلى محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد.
The subject that we will be discussing of in these days of Muharram is fitna. And this is something that everyone faces, especially if you claim to be a believer. And we see that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, when He spoke of this verse in Surah An-Kabut, we see that He has a doubt in the faith of believers. He used Alif Lam Mim in Surah Al-Baqarah, where he says after that, ذَلِكَ الْكِتَابُ لَا رَيْبَ فِيهِ. He says that the Quran is something that Allah has no doubt in. There's no doubt in it. And then when he uses Alif Lam Mim in Surah An-Kabut, right after that he says, but I have a doubt in the faith of believers. So obviously, what does this doubt mean? How can Allah have a doubt? Obviously, here, the issue is that the doubt is not with Allah. Allah knows the hidden secrets of every heart. You can't hide anything from Allah. The doubt is with the believers themselves who claim to be believers. Those who claim to be mu'min and say, I believe in Allah. I believe in Islam. I am a mu'min. Then obviously to make them understand that there is a doubt in their claim. And hence Allah says to clear that doubt, He makes them go through fitna. And after the fitna, then there are two things that are going to become clear. He says, وَلَيَعْلَمَنَّ اللَّهُ الَّذِينَ صَدَقُوا. Allah will know who is true in their claim. وَلَيَعْلَمَنَّ الْكَاذِبِينَ. And Allah will know who is lying in their claim. So everyone who claims to be a believer, the process is you claim, you make a statement, I believe, you claim, Allah puts you through a test, then it's known whether you are or you're not. Whether you're true or you're phony. Whether you are real or you're fake. will only be known after the test, not before the test. It's only known after the test. So now, one thing is clear, that if you are a believer, you are going to be tested. You will have trials. And this is called fitna. You see, the word fitna has two meanings. One, it is the real meaning of the word fitna, and the other one is a figurative meaning. The real meaning of fitna is bala. It means trials, test. This is the real meaning of the word fitna. The figurative meaning of fitna is dissension, corruption, discord. But sometimes it happens that the figurative meaning is used so much that now people understand it to be the real meaning. In the sense that the figurative meaning of fitna is used so much that whenever we say, oh, there was fitna here and there was fitna there, so obviously this meaning, now whenever we say fitna, it doesn't mean trial, it means discord and dissension. You see, this is what happens. So now when we speak of fitna, at first we are going to speak of the real meaning, and then we will go to the figurative meaning, because both of them are used in the Quran. Both of them are used in the Quran so that we understand what is fitna. So now when Allah said that if you are a believer, you are going to go through a trial, what is this trial that you are going to go through? What is the format of the test? He's going to take an exam, so he must give us a sample paper. To know, okay, what is the test in? If you don't know what the test is in, then you know what? It will be really hard. And to make it easy for us, he let it be known to us what is the test in. He's also letting us know to make it easy for us that this is what the test is going to be in. So when you get these things, beware that this is a test. And he speaks again in another ayat and he explains what is the format of this trial and fitna that a believer is going to face. And he says, وَلَنَبْلُوَنَّكُمْ بِشَيْءٍ مِّنَ الْخَوْفِ وَالْجُوءِ وَنَقْسٍ مِّنَ الْأَمْوَالِ وَالْأَنفُسِ وَالثَّمَرَاتِ. And obviously most people have heard this ayat before, and they have heard the second part of the ayat where Allah says, وَبَشِّرِ السَّابِرِينَ الَّذِينَ إِذَا أَصَابَتْهُمْ مُصِيبَةٌ قَالُوا إِنَّا لِلَّهِ وَإِنَّا إِلَيْهِ رَاجِعُونَ. So everyone has heard that part, but this ayat, that is at the beginning of this verse, here Allah says that there are five things you will be tested in. At least five things I'm explaining to you directly. Anyone who claims to be a mu'min, these five things you will be tested in. And your trial is going to be in these five things. There will be more things also, but these are the basic five things. If you are a Muslim at the lowest level, then these five things are there and you need to be aware of them. What is the first one? He says, وَلَنَبْلُكَنَّكُمْ بِشَيْءٍ مِّنَ الْخَوْفِ. The first test is fear. I'm going to test you through fear. And then, jew, hunger. I'm going to test you through hunger. وَنَقْسٍ مِّنَ الْأَمْوَالِ. Then I'm going to test you by making you short of money, your wealth, taking away your wealth. Then the next thing after that is unforced, by taking your lives. And the thing after that is taking your fruits, meaning your children. So for every believer, these five things he goes through in a test. There's no way that if he's a believer, if he's a mu'min, if he says he's a Muslim, I believe in Allah, then you have to face these five things in your life. There's no way out of this. You are going to face these five things. And if you face them, Allah is letting you know from beforehand that this is a test. This is a trial. Right? And hence, from here, now I want to just explain one thing today to make you understand something that a lot of people have a misconception in. Believers, or those who say they're believers, they have these misconceptions and they base their ideology on that. They'll see tests, they'll see themselves going through poverty, they'll see themselves going through hardships and afflictions and sufferings, and they will have a misconception sometimes that, oh, this is a test from Allah. You see, because of the fact that they know Allah has mentioned this, so one of the things that they pride themselves in is that if they are tested in these things, then at least they know they are a believer. Right? At least you know you are a Muslim, knowing that these tests are on you. Alhamdulillah, I'm doing something right that this is happening to me. I'm doing something good, right? That these things are happening to me. But what needs to be understood before we even get to the tests and trials that Allah gives us, before we can even get there, the cause of trials is not just Allah. You see, it is not just Allah who gives suffering, it is not just Allah who gives trial. Sometimes and many times the cause of trials is our own sins. Is our own self. We are the cause of the trials, and when we bring about these sufferings on ourselves to make us feel good, to make our own self feel good, we say, oh, you know, Allah is testing us because I'm a believer. And now I want you to turn your attention to the dua of Imam Ali that we read every Thursday. In Dua-i Kumail, we see this sentence that Imam Ali had said. And he mentions this, and he wants us to ponder over it every Thursday. He says, Allahumma ghafirli al-dhunub allati tunzilul bala. Allah, you know, not all the sufferings and bala and trials are from Allah. Imam Ali is saying that, oh Allah, forgive me those sins that bring down sufferings upon me. You see, many times sufferings that we go through in life are not the result of Allah testing us, but as a result of our own sins bringing about those sufferings and those trials. We are the ones who are making this happen to our own self. We let this happen to ourselves, and these sufferings that we go through. When we go through these sufferings, and when we go through these hardships, we don't have a job, we can't find a wife, we don't have a car, and there are many things that happens. And we see that, we say, well, you know what, Allah puts us through tests. Oh yes, yes. You know, I console myself, I comfort myself knowing that Allah puts me through these tests, knowing that I'm a believer. This misconception comes to believers. They think that this is happening because Allah thinks that you're a believer and Allah's testing you. But before we even start thinking about Allah's test, first we need to make sure that this is not our own fault. First we need to make sure that this is not our own fault, that these hardships we are going through, and these trials that we are going through, and these problems that we are going through, are not the result of our own doings. Let me explain this if you send me a salawat. So now we need to see that Imam Ali is making it clear that there are certain sins that bring about adversities and problems. There are certain things that we do, there are certain sins that we do that bring about hardships and afflictions and problems on us. We do it to ourselves. First, in order for us to make sure that this is a test from Allah or not, we need to make sure that we are not doing those sins. That we are not doing those sins. And hence, this is why it's necessary to recognize those sins that bring down adversity and problems on us. And then when we are sure we are not doing it, then we can say that yes, Allah is testing us. Because I haven't done anything to bring down those problems upon me. First, we need to know that. And that is where you see that Imam Sajjad alayhi salatu was salam. He has mentioned and clarified this. There you see in Du'a-i Humail, Imam Ali had mentioned that there are sins that bring down bala. And some people went to Imam Sajjad and said that your grandfather had made this statement in this dua, that there are certain sins that bring down bala and they bring down adversities and afflictions upon us. What are those sins? What are those sins that bring down bala on us? So here I'm going to mention some of the things that Imam has said that is related to our topic. Imam then replies back and explains that the thing that you do, the sins that you do to bring down adversities from Allah, and not only that, he added, he says, not only do they bring down bala, but they prevent rizq and provisions from coming to you. They prevent rizq from coming to you. That if you do these things, they will not let rizq. It will be an obstacle for rizq to reach you. If you do these sins. Sometimes we're all wondering why our lives are not going in the right direction. What's going on in the, what we are doing and what is happening that our things are not working out. And we are always faced with problems, one thing after another. And the life of a mu'min here is always a day short and a penny short. A day late and a penny short, huh? That's his life. Every time he's trying to reach up to something, he says he falls back again. So first of all, here Imam is saying two things. That these sins that the Imam is going to mention bring down afflictions and adversities on us. And they also stop rizq from coming to you. He said the first thing is that he said, تَرْكُ إِغَاثَةُ الْمَأْرُوبِ. He said that if you leave the aid and assistance of someone who's needy. You're driving and you see someone in need. And you know it's a headache for you and you ignore it and you go forward. You say, I don't want to be involved in this. I'll waste my time. If you see someone in need, someone who is in need of help, and you go past without looking after him and without even trying to take care of him, without trying to help him, then here not only are you ignoring him, but you are telling Allah that I want sufferings and I want hardships and I don't want your risk because I have enough. I don't need your provisions because I can do without your provisions. That's what you're saying when you see someone in need and you leave him and you do not do anything to help him. You see, this, my friends, understand. This is that sin that brings about bala and stops rizq from coming to you. When someone is in need and you do not do anything to help him and you just say that, let him be. Let him be, it's alright. I can go on my way. I don't need to get involved in this. This is just a pain. I don't need this on my plate. I have enough on my plate. When you see someone in need and you do not help him, then this is that sin that brings down bala and sufferings on your life, and also they stop the rizq of Allah from reaching you. My friend, understand this. This is the first one. The second one he mentions is, he says, tarko i'anatul mazlum. I'anatul mazlum. He says that if you see someone who's oppressed, and you see someone to whom injustice has been done to, and you do not go forward to help him and aid him and help him to fight injustice, that injustice that has been done on him, then this is that sin which is letting Allah know not to give you risk because you're rejecting it. And to send down sufferings upon you because you want them. You let them. You see, Allah protects everyone from sufferings that are harmful. But when you do these sins, then you're asking Allah to take away His protection. When He takes away His protection, then you are left vulnerable. You're left vulnerable to the afflictions that are out there. And Allah's protection is not there for you. So when you see someone who's mazloom, when you see someone who is oppressed, then it is your job, that is, you should go forward to help them. If you do not, then this is a sin that brings about bala. And not only the mazloom, when we have mazloom in our mind, we think that, you know, these are just historical characters. These historical characters that are mazloom. You know, we hear about Imam Hussein and we think that he is mazloom. Yes, he was mazloom. He was unjustly dealt with. He was oppressed by the ruler of his time. Right? But when we look at him, we think that mazloom means helpless. Imam Hussein wasn't helpless. You see, Imam Hussein wasn't helpless. He was mazloom, meaning he was unjustly dealt with. But you see, even today, Imam Hussein, his cause and the mission by which he stood for is mazloom. So if you see someone who is mazloom, you should help him. You should aid him. You should assist him. So if today you're saying that if I was with Hussein, I would help him, then Hussein's mission is alive today also and is in need of help. Let's see who's helping it. Salawat ala Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
My friend, his mission is alive still today. And it's alive and it's right around us. And we are thinking that, okay, where is it? Well, this is the third thing that Imam Sajjad had mentioned. He said, the third thing that brings about afflictions and sufferings is if you leave doing Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahi al Munkar. If you leave doing Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahi anil Munkar, if you do not order the people towards good, and if you do not forbid them from evil, then you know that is a sin that is going to bring down sufferings upon you and is going to stop the risk of Allah from coming to you. And if you're not doing these things, then do not say that the sufferings you're going through is because of Allah. It's not. It is because of these sins that we have done. We are doing these sins and that's why it's happening. That's why these things are happening. So now if you want to make sure that this is a test from Allah, first do not be a culprit of these three sins. And then when we see that right now what is more important than helping a poor person on the street or someone who's helpless on the street is helping the cause of Imam Hussein that today is in need of help. Be the cause, be the helper of that cause. Now what is that cause? You know, obviously, if I say what the cause of Imam Hussain is, you will say, well, that's Maulana's opinion. Right? If someone else has said, if it was in some hadith, they'll say, well, that hadith, you don't know if it's right or wrong. So obviously the thing is that if even if some other imam said it, right, well, you know, there's still a gap. I mean, you know, when people want to justify their actions and their ideology, they justify it in any way. So here we see that Imam Hussein himself has made sure that he makes his mission clear even before he starts it. Yes. You know, he wanted to make sure he made it clear. And that too, he said, you know, he wanted to make it clear and so clear that there should be no doubt after this what my mission was, what my purpose was, and what did I set out to achieve. No doubt should be there. You see, after the Prophet, you see that there was a doubt what he left behind. Why? Because when he asked for the paper and pen, they knew what was happening. And they knew that if he writes it down, we can never refute it. Right? So they said, don't give him the paper and pen. So that ambiguity will remain. And we can take advantage of that ambiguous situation. And we can change itrat to sunnat. You see, we can change itrat to sunnah. See how easy was it just to that opening that was left by not giving the pen and paper to the Prophet. You see, they used that opening to change the whole ideology of Islam from itrat to sunnah. That one opening that was left. So now when that one opening that was left there, Imam Hussein wanted to make sure that this doesn't happen after him. That's why he said, no, I'm not going to say this to anyone. I'm not going to say my will to anyone. Even my own brothers. I won't say it to my own brothers also. So he called for his brother Muhammad Hanifia. He said, I want to give you my last will before I leave. He said, all right, go ahead, say it. He said, no, I'm not going to say it to you. I want you to bring me a pen and paper. I want you to bring me a pen and paper. And this time I want to make sure that I'm not refused my pen and paper. So that my mission becomes so clear that no one can refute it after me. No one can put words in my mouth. No one can make intentions for my cause. I will make it for myself. And that's why when he asked for the pen and paper, he wanted to write it down in such a strong way in history that no one can refute it. And he wrote down, I am not leaving to cause mischief or fitna or any wrong. I am leaving to do Islah in the nation of my grandfather. I'm going to do Islah to rectify the nation of my grandfather. And then what? Wa an amura bil ma'ruf wa anha anil munkar. He said that I'm going this for the sole purpose of doing amr bil ma'ruf and nahi anil munkar in the Muslim world. So his mission, he stated, is amr bil ma'ruf wa nahi anil munkar, and he let everyone know that. And now it's up to us to see that mission that he left behind that is in need of us. Of us doing something for it. Are we doing that or are we not doing that? Are we doing that mission or are we not doing that mission? And he went in such a way, he made it clear that this is being done for Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahy al Munkar. My friends, this was the mission of Imam Hussein. He came out for this. And this is that duty, that if you leave this duty, then Allah sends down bala and sufferings in your life, and he will take away his provisions from your life. There is that duty. If you leave this duty, then after this, there is no risk that's coming to you, and Allah is going to put sufferings in your life. And it's not because he wants to test you, it's because you deserve it. You deserve it. See, that's why it is said in another ayah, it says, وَاتَّقُوا fitnatan. Wattaku fitnatan, be aware of, fear that fitna, fear that trial that is not only going to involve the oppressors, it will also involve those who are oppressed. It's not only going to involve those who are oppressing, it's also going to take those who are oppressed also. Those who are other than that, it's also going to afflict them. And that comes because a person leaves Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahy al Munkar. Imam Hussein stated that in his mission, and now when his ziyarat was written in Ziyarat-e-Warisa, that we read. In Ziyarat-e-Warisa when we read it, and Imam Sadiq al-Islam asked us to read this.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
He asked us to read Ziyarat-e-Warisa. And in Ziyarat-e-Warisa, what do we say? He says, Ashhadu annaka qad aqanta salat wa ataita zakat. I testify that you have established prayer and you gave zakat. And then what? What else do you testify? Wa an amura bil ma'ruf wa anha anil munkar. That you have done amr bil ma'ruf and nahy anil munkar. You see, at the beginning he made his mission statement, and at the end of his life we testify that he completed his mission statement. When he set out to do his mission, he set his goals, and we testify that he fulfilled his goals. You see, that is a life worth living. That when you set the goal so high and you reach those goals, that is the life worth living, my friend. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
And hence we see that Imam Ali, that Imam Hussein made it clear that his mission is to do Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahy al Munkar. Now how do we do that? You know, how do we do that? What is the way of doing Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahy al Munkar? We see that Imam Hussein just told us to do Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahy al Munkar. He did it. But where is it explained? Where is it described? My friends, Imam Hussein said it, and Imam Zainul Abideen showed it. Imam Zainul Abideen showed this. How do you do Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahy al Munkar? He said, he showed it to us. You know, and it wasn't easy for him to show it also. You know, he went through a lot of trials. He went through a lot of sufferings to show it himself. You know, when we hear of Imam Hussein's trials, and I'm not doing a musibah now, I'm just making this statement so that it can be understood of how Imam Sajjad explained this. Yeah, inshallah, the musibah will come. But just this one statement so you understand what hardship that he went through. You know, that, you know, when Imam Sajjad is trying to explain this, what he went through to show how to do Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahy al Munkar. You know, we have this sentence in Du'as and Ziyarat, and it says that Dhubiha al-Husayn fi Karbala. Right? Dhubiha is from Zabiha. Zabiha is when you slaughter an animal. And there are different ways of slaughtering an animal. You know, different ways of slaughtering an animal. You slaughter a sheep by cutting its neck and head. You slaughter a fish by taking it out of water. Both of them are called zabiha. You know, when you do dhibh of a sheep, you slaughter its neck. And when you do zabiha of a fish, you take it out of water. You know? And we see that Imam Hussein, he did his jihad and he was slaughtered like a sheep. And when a fish is taken out of water, it is in torture, in pain, in torment. And it dies in torment. See, that jihad it goes through. Imam Hussein was the example of the sheep when it says, Zubiha Hussein fi Karbala. And Zainab was the example of the fish when her hijab was taken away from her. She suffered and was tortured like a fish as she went through her trials like that. That is how Zainab went through the trials, and Imam Sajjad was a part of those trials. When she was taken out, and her hijab was taken out, and she was taken through Kufa and Sham, imagine what Imam Sajjad went through. And there's no one really who understood the tragedies more than Imam Sajjad. It happened in front of his eyes, it happened with him in the midst of it. In the midst of all the trials, you will find Imam Sajjad. All the trials you see that are done for Allah's cause, you'll find him there. But in those trials, he taught us how to do Amr bil Maruf and Nahi al Munkar. You see, and there are two ways he taught us. He says two things. Two things that you do. And in each of these things, your goal is to propagate the message of Allah. To give the message of Allah, to enhance it, to give it further. The first thing he taught us was to do dua. The first method he used of doing Amr bil Maruf and Nahi al Munkar was dua. He was doing Amr bil Maruf and Nahi al Munkar, but through dua. He would make dua, and he would praise Allah, and he would say things to Allah, and he will teach people through that means. And the second means that he used to do Amr bil Maruf and Nahi al Munkar was the mourning of Imam Hussein. This aza of Imam Hussein. This azadari. This is what he used. This was a means that he used. And you see how he used it. I mean, you see, he lived in a time when you are not allowed to say anything about Imam Hussein, to gather people around Imam Hussein's mission. He wasn't allowed to do that. And we are heading in the same direction in this country also. Yes. You're not openly allowed to say you're Muslim anymore. You're not allowed to say that now anymore. You can't speak out openly anymore. Now you have to fear to say the things that your religion wants you to say. And you have to ice them up and make it look good. Like, sweet coat them, you know. You can't say what your religion really wants you to do or say. And we see those people who are saying it, what's happening to them. So, this was the same circumstances in which Imam Sajjad lived. And he taught us that, you know what? Two ways that you do Amr bil Maruf Nahi al Munkar. First, you do it through dua. Make dua. I mean, if you make dua, he was holding the drape of the Kaaba and he is calling out to Allah crying, who's going to stop you? Who's going to stop you? Alright, he's making dua, so what? What's the problem? He's supplicating to God. So what? What's the problem? But you see, in those dua, he is propagating Islam. You see that? In those duas, he's propagating Islam and he's letting the people know what Islam is and what Islamic ideology is. And on the other hand, you see that he's doing azadari. He's doing aza of his father. Who's going to stop you from crying for your father who was killed in a worse condition than animals? Who's going to stop you? No, you shouldn't cry for him. But he was killed like an animal, worse than animals. And these animals are given water. He wasn't given water. He'll say, let him cry. His father died that way, right? Who's going to stop you when you say that my brother's heart was ripped from his chest? Who's going to stop you for that? You see, here, Imam Sajjad used to cry and cry so much. But in the same way, he used to teach people what Islam is, who Allah is, what justice is. In the same thing that he was doing, he used two methods, dua and azan. And in both ways, he used these two methods to teach people how to do it. How to do Amr bil Ma'ruf Nahi anil Munkar. But here, sometimes, we have to understand that many people weep for Imam Hussein. Many people cry for Imam Hussein. Not every crying is for Imam Hussein. No, let me explain that. You send me salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
You see, and sometimes you will see this happening, you know, until, you know, and you hear these things all the time. You will see this. The sufferings that Imam Hussein faced, you will see for a lot of believers, is not enough to make them cry. And you hear these excuses all the time. Until I don't hear it in my language, I cannot cry. Until I don't see the drama, I cannot cry. Until I don't do this, I cannot cry. So the musibat, the hardship of Imam Hussein is not making you cry. It's the drama around it that's making you cry. See, it's the drama around it that's making you cry. If it was the musibat of Imam Hussein, just the thought of that should bring tears in your eyes. Just the thought of that should bring tears in your eyes and melt your heart. Right? But when you need these dramas to cry, then it means that it wasn't for Imam Hussein. And now I want to give you some examples of some people who cried without any dramas. Without any dramas, they cried, and they cried a lot. I give you some examples and you ponder over those examples. Right? There was a group of people who cried and cried a lot for Imam, and they wept a lot for Imam Hussein, lamented over him. And these were the people who were in the court of Yazid. In the court of Yazid. When Imam Sajjad said, after the person gave the azan to stop him from speaking, when he said that, okay, allow me to speak also. And he went and spoke, you see, the court was crying. And they were crying a lot. They heard Imam Sajjad and they cried a lot for him. Right? They cried a lot. They're still sitting with Yazid, but they're still crying. See, they're sitting with Yazid, but they're crying. Crying a lot, right? One example I gave you. Let me give you another example, second example. Right? The second group of people who cried a lot was the army of Umar ibn Sa'd. Army of Umar ibn Sa'd cried a lot when Imam Hussein brought out Ali Asghar. When he brought out Ali Asghar, and he had Ali Asghar in his hand, and when Ali Asghar put his tongue on his lips to show how thirsty he was, you see, the whole army cried. And it cried so much that Umar ibn Sa'd was afraid. Umar ibn Sa'd was afraid that this is going to cause a revolution in his army. He said, what's going on here? Why is everyone crying? Why is everyone crying? And you see, this is what happened. They all cried. Everyone cried, right? But you see, they're all standing with Umar ibn Sa'd.
Ya Allah.
They're all standing with Umar ibn Sa'd, but they're crying. You see, they're crying a lot. When you heard that, they cried. But they're standing with Umar ibn Sa'd. I gave you two examples. Let me give you a third example. Of, you know, crying without drama. I mean, really. Someone who cried really. And this was from a riwayat from Umm Kulthum. Not a lot of riwayat are from Umm Kulthum, but this is one of them. And Umm Kulthum says that a person came And he put his hands on the ears of Sakina, and he stripped the earrings of Sakina from her earlobes. And he heard the daughter of Hussein shriek out and cry in pain as her earlobes were ripped apart and the blood was spurting out. He saw that, and he saw that she shrieked, and he also started to cry, and he was crying profusely. Tears are running down his eyes. And this was a contradictory act. On one hand, he is taking the earrings from the ears of Sakina, and on the other hand, he's crying on the pain she's going through. Someone asked him, Why are you crying? You're doing this. Why are you crying for? He says that, you know, he said, how can I not cry? This is the Ahlul Bayt of the Prophet. He said, Ya Ahlul Bayt al-Risalat. He said that you are the Ahlul Bayt of the Prophet, of the Messenger. How can I not cry for you? If the mountains hear your sufferings, they will melt down. So if the mountains are melting down because of sufferings, why are you doing this to this girl? And you're crying. If you know they are the Ahlul Bayt of the Prophet, why are you doing this to this girl? And you ripped her ears out and you're letting her know that she's crying. He says, well, if I don't take them, someone else will take them. And friends, this is crying also. He was crying also, and at the same time, he is putting the sufferings on Sakina. He says, this is also crying. So now, we need to see what is the right way to weep for Imam Hussein. What is the right way to weep for Imam Hussein? All these people who were crying, Imam Sajjad had to teach us how to weep in the right way. How to cry in the right way. That's why when Imam Sajjad, his whole life you see that he spent in teaching people how to weep for Imam Hussein. How to cry for Imam Hussein, he spent his whole life. And you see that his way of crying, and you see the difference in his way. He is crying at the same time and propagating the deen of Allah at the same time. This is the true way of crying and weeping for Imam Hussein. When you cry for Imam Hussein and you're also propagating the message of Allah to the people. This is the true weeping for Imam Hussein. Now you see Imam Sajjad, he is crying and they're in the majlis and he has the majlis in his house. And when you see the time for prayer comes in, when you see the time for prayer comes in, he stops everyone and says, he stands up for prayer. He stands up for prayer immediately. Stops everyone. Everyone stops. Sees him pray and they pray also. And as soon as he prays, as he's done prayer, he starts crying again. As soon as he finishes prayer, immediately he starts crying again. And they ask him, Master, you were just in sajda and you just came out of prayer. Why are you crying right after prayer? You know what he said? Listen to it carefully and then take it to your heart what it means. They asked him, why are you crying right after you ended prayer? I mean, you went into prayer, you stopped crying, and right after you finished prayer, you started crying again. Why did you do this? He says, at least my head was able to come out of sajda. My father, he wasn't allowed to come out of sajda. His head was locked in sajda. Ajarakum Allah. Ajarakum Allah. You know, this was Imam Sajjad. This is the weeping of Imam Sajjad, the crying of Imam Sajjad. And you know, like everything in Islam you see, Everything that you see, that you know in Islam, you see Imam Sajjad teaching people. At the same time, he's crying for Imam Hussein, and at the same time, he's teaching. When Ramadan came, and he would fast, and he would fast in such a way, and he would fast. Then, at the time of iftar, you see when he takes iftar, he will start crying, and people will say, "You just had iftar, and you fasted the whole day, and you had iftar, and all he had, he wouldn't have any meal for iftar. He won't have any food for iftar. Just a glass of water he would have for iftar." And when they would ask him, "Why are you crying right after iftar?" He said, "Because my father was slaughtered without any water." Don't you see the animals? When they are slaughtered, they're at least given water. Islam says to give them water so much so that they look three times and don't want water. My father was slaughtered and his neck was cut, but he was stayed in the tent of thirst. Ajrukumullah. When Imam Hussein went for Hajj, you know when he went for Hajj, and he went there many times. When he went for Hajj, every time he would go for Hajj, he would cry. And people will say that everyone is so happy to come to the house of Allah. They are the guest of Allah, and they come to the house of Allah. Why are you crying? And you have come to the guest of Allah. Allah has invited you. He says, "How can I not cry? Don't you see this is the Kaaba? The whole world wants to come through it, and my father was forced to go away from it." My father was forced to go away from me. The life of Imam Sajjad, my friend, his whole life was spent in Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahi anil Munkar. His whole life was spent in Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahi anil Munkar. Just one more thing I will mention, inshallah. May Allah give you the reward for these tears, and may Allah accept your ibadat, and may Allah make all of you a helper of the Imam. Just one more riwayat I'll mention, and I will end this speech, and you reflect upon it. Just one more riwayat. May Allah reward you all. You know, Imam Sajjad had a maid who served him all his life. He had a maid who served him all his life. And there are some people who came from Medina to visit the Imam, and he was busy, and they met her. And they wanted to know about Imam Sajjad. They wanted to know of Imam Sajjad and about his character and about his life, so that they can take back something to their place, some lessons in their lives. So they asked her, "Please tell us about your master. Please tell us about Imam Sajjad." She said, "Do you want to know in detail, or do you want to know in brief?" He answered, "Do you want to know in detail or brief?" They say, "Well, no, we have to go back, say it in brief." Say it in brief about Imam Sajjad, about what he does and how he is and what kind of a person he is. And you know what she said? She said, "I have been with him for 30 years. 30 years I've been with him. I never made his bed at night, and I've never cooked for him in the day." They said, "But what does this have to do with Imam Sajjad? This is about you, what you have done or what you haven't done." He says, "Don't you understand that he is that person? All night he would be in sajda before Allah. He would not sleep in the night, and he would be fasting in the day. Never has he eaten when the sun was up. He would go hungry when the sun is up, and he would be in this situation all his life for 30 years. Not a day I have seen him beating in the day. Not a day I have seen him sleeping in the night. This is the life of Imam Sajjad." And you can imagine why this torment is on him, why he made his life like that. You know why? Because of the suffering that Zainab went through in Kufa, inshallah. When Zainab went through the suffering of Kufa and Sham, when he had to see Zainab and Umayk also, Sakina on the streets and bazaar of Kufa and Sham, his heart was tormented in such a way that even after that, when he was asked, where did you face the most suffering? What has made you so old? What has made you crippled? He said, Asham, Asham, سيعلم الذين أي منقلب ينقلب معدل حسين